Hi, welcome to Info Dumpies. My name's Brianne. I'm autistic. I have ADHD. My pronouns are she, her. And I will truly be a musician when I can play the theme to Jurassic Park on the piano.
Hi, I'm Violet. I have ADHD. My pronouns are she, her. And today, I'm not just honking on Bobo.
Not just honking on Bobo.
No, I am honking on Bobo, but I'm not just honking on Bobo.
Not just honking on Bobo.
And if you don't know what that means, I don't remember either. I don't remember what that's from, but I remember saying it at one point.
That's an Aerosmith album, is it not?
Is it? Oh my God. Hold on.
Yeah, Aerosmith, honking on Bobo.
Oh my God. Yeah. Wow. There is a... Okay. That's... You gotta be in my brain again.
It is in your brain, I guarantee, because... The McElroys brought it up back in like 2015 or something. What does honking on Bobo mean? And Aerosmith picked it because it sounded like it can mean a lot of things. It sounded suggestive. It has no true meaning from what I recall.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's a good phrase, honking on Bobo.
It really feels like one of them had a verbal stim. They're like, we gotta make it the album. I'm honking on Bobo.
Honestly, yeah. And it's like Aerosmith, I've not known them to honk in much capacity.
No.
Perhaps if they were a ska band.
A ska band just called Honkin' on Bobo?
That'd be good. Hey, copyright, copyright, copyright. Said it three times, you can't steal it.
So it is but Violet episode today. Are you talking about honking or Bobo?
A little bit of both. So what I want to talk about today is something called Algo Rave. And this is something that I just learned about fairly recently, and I went down a very deep rabbit hole about it. It's really interesting, or I hope you'll find that it's very interesting, but I found it to be very interesting because it is very rare in the music world for a new kind of way of doing things to emerge, but this is kind of that. It's a relatively new type of music performance that you can do outside of just playing an instrument. Algo rave is basically, it's an event, right? You go to an algo rave and you play electronic music there, right? That's what you're listening to. If you were to like close your eyes and walk into an algo rave, you might not even know that it is an algo rave. You'd just be hearing some fat beats and dancey electronic music. It is in how the music is made that makes it so interesting. The performer in this case is, instead of like DJing with pre-recorded tracks or things like that, or GarageBand or whatever, the performer is creating music live by writing and manipulating computer code in real time.
So for me, someone who has trouble remembering my own name if the room is too loud and has trouble with what I call computer work because I'm 87, it's hard for me to focus on computers. It is baffling to me that someone could sit at a computer and actively do something that cognitively taxing in a rave.
It's definitely impressive to me.
Yeah.
Like I have gone through the process of understanding how this works, and I've even composed a little song through the process of live coding, basically. It didn't come out super great, but it's something. It's a listenable song that it's like you could dance to it.
It was the fact that you were able to do that. It's amazing.
It does help. I have a little bit of experience with programming from when I was in college, and then just in a personal hobby sense. I'm not great at it.
And
but
also the trans femme stereotype.
That's true. I am a trans woman, and I by birthright. In with electronic music.
Yeah. Yeah, the spirit of Wendy Carlos came to you.
I was going
to
mention Wendy Carlos.
Oh, yeah. Good. Cool.
Yeah, I love Wendy Carlos. Absolute trans icon, electronic music pioneer. She's amazing. One thing that I found that I really like about Algo Raves is that the Algo Rave scene, which most of the performers refer to themselves as live coders.
That is so much like
musicians,
like it's from Hackers. I love that.
Right?
Yeah,
I'm a live coder.
I'm a live coder, and this is my phone freak friend.
Right. It's so cool, honestly. And there are a lot of women involved in the Algo Rave scene, which I think is really fucking cool. I don't know necessarily if any of them are trans or what, but there's a lot of people that identify as women in the scene, and I'm very happy about that. And I'm going to mention a few artists that I found that I really, really like here in just a bit. And they all have cool, like, Algo Rave DJ names, live
That's
coder
extremely
names that are cool.
I yeah, also think like it's refreshing with all of the AI slop that's being pushed and how, you know, fascist streaming service Spotify has AI bands that they don't reveal are AI bands. Kind of stuff, to have people saying, no, we can use computers to make music entirely in new ways that are not stealing from other people. We'll find new ways to make music with computers. I think that's neat.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's really, really cool. So the way that I first came across this, I was doom scrolling, as one does, scrolling through all the various reels and, you know, TikToks and what have you.
The enrichment time that stresses me out.
Yeah, exactly. That, and I don't know why I do it. Although sometimes I'm rewarded, like in this situation where I found a Instagram reel by a person who goes by the name Switch Angel, aka Jade Rose. So in this video, she is talking over basically a programming prompt screen, right? So like a little command prompt type window. And she's saying, I'm going to add this now. And her voice is also very, like, not robotic, but like, if you think like GLaDOS from like Portal series, mm-hmm. if you can imagine that. So almost like she has like a synthetic quality that she's adding to her voice while she's making these things. And she's like saying, and now I'm going to add the drum beat. And then she adds the drum beat by literally putting in programming code and then executes it. And then it adds a drum beat to the music. Moments later, she's like, now I'm going to add the hi-hat. And she does that. And it's just so, it like struck me, like, I'd never seen anyone do that. I've seen people use software for making music, like GarageBand or even like trackers, right? Where you have MIDI samples of like sounds and things like that that you're assigning like two different times along a music track or a soundtrack. This is not that. This is literally just programming in a programming language, and you are executing sections of code and saying, make this sound, computer, which is wild to me. And I was just like really transfixed by it. They were also able to do stuff like make a oscilloscope, essentially. So are you familiar with what an oscilloscope is?
You know, I've only seen it written, and I thought it was oscilloscope.
I've always heard it as oscilloscope.
I might be wrong.
I'm not sure I'm right necessarily, but it's possible it's either way. But that thing that makes the wiggly line, right? It's usually like a green wiggling line that's depicting like a sound. That is what that is, essentially. It's literally depicting the waveform of a sound by oscillating a line up and down. An oscilloscope electronically shows a change in a signal over time, in this case, a sound signal. And when you're generating music on a synthesizer, that is electronically being generated. And you're, in most cases, unless you have like samples and things like that, you're starting with a very simple waveform, like a sine wave, an up-down wave. That by itself makes a sound like a bee. And if you just, through programming, tell the computer, all right, chop that up and change the frequency and change the shape of the sound as you render it, do all of this stuff, you can end up with a whole song and modify it live like a DJ through changing the parameters that you've put into your little program. It's so freaking cool.
That's amazing. I just learned a pianist.
Yeah, honestly, a lot of what you are learning in piano is like still relevant to this stuff.
It sounds like something completely different to me, like figuring out how to make the piano do its job in the first place on top of how to play it. Does that make sense? Like building the piano and then playing it is what this sounds like.
In a sense, yeah, you're kind of taking the piano out of the equation of your electronic piano. So if you can maybe think of it like this. When you press a key on your electronic keyboard, what happens?
Boink.
Boink. Boink. Exactly, boink happens. And that boink happens because when you press down the key, it sends a signal to the computer inside the keyboard.
It says, boink.
It says the person playing this keyboard pressed down on the key C3. They pressed it with this amount of intensity and velocity, and the switch was actuated, right, by your finger doing that, and it set the parameters. And all we're doing is just taking the switch out of the equation and manually telling it, all right, imagine someone pressed a key on a keyboard, and imagine that they did so like this.
Fucking wild.
It's crazy. Honestly, I had a really hard time wrapping my brain around how it's possible until I watched a few videos and I followed a tutorial, and I actually made an Algo Rave song myself. And it's not very good, but I did do it.
It's wild that you could even do it, even if it's not good. I wouldn't, Violet, I wouldn't even know my ass from a hole in the ground with that. I don't, that's wild that you could just do that.
Well, thank you. So at this point, if you're okay with it, I'm going to share my screen and show you a little simple Algo Rave like program that I've made and just demonstrate what it sounds like and what each of these bits is doing without trying to get too complicated.
Yeah, so this looks like a bunch of purple and green writing that numbers, and there are letters.
There's numbers. There's letters.
It's on something called strudel. Delicious.
So.
And the top of the screen says strudel. And then it's got a little play button, an update button, a share button, and a learn button. And then there are nine lines of code, which I would say is Greek to me, but I could probably read Greek easier than I could read this.
That's fair. Yeah, since you have a linguistics background. But this does make sense, and I can kind of walk through it. So essentially, this website is called strudel.cc, and it's one of the many ways that you can make Algo Rave music specifically. And this I found was just the easiest way for me to get into it and learn. If you know JavaScript, you can learn this very, very easily because Strudel is based on JavaScript.
I know Java.
You know Java. You know a good cup of coffee when you see one. That's for dang sure.
Yep.
So yeah, it's basically just a little text interface here, and there's links where you can go learn how to use it. And then there's a play button here. Now, I have instructed the computer to ignore these first. So I know you said there's nine lines of code, but there's just spaces in between. You can ignore the spaces basically, but these four lines here, each of these is, you can kind of think of it as a different instrument. I've told the computer, all right, here's an instrument, here's an instrument, here's an instrument, here's an instrument. This first one is a sound, and there's some abbreviations here. BD is bass drum. HH is hi-hat.
Oh, hi-hat.
OH is, I think it's open hat. It's like a splashier symbol. I forget exactly. And so it's a sound. I'm telling it, all right, make this sound. And I've put these, the sound itself of what I'm supposed to be, like what instruments make up that sound in this like bracket. And this symbol, these little arrows, are basically telling it, play the bass drum, then do the hi-hat, then go back to the bass drum, and then do the open hat. Bass drum, hi-hat, bass drum, open hat. And then if I add in I have a ticky-tack, which is like a tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick, that kind of thing. And then I have a couple like lead sounds here that modulate and change over time. They run through different notes at different speeds. And then I have a bass that I add in here. And together,
it's going bonk, 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 bonk.
Well, actually, it's you might recognize these F2, F2, F2. So bonk, bonk, bonk. And then it gets to this and it goes G2. And then it goes back to the F2s. And then D2, back to the F2s. So bonk, 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 bonk.
Oh, bonk, 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 bonk.
You can kind of imagine what that might sound like, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, here it is, all together. So, yeah.
Yeah, this is Finn and Jake are going insane on the dance floor right now.
Oh, thank you. I take that as a very high compliment.
Yeah, this is being played in the land of Ooh.
I really appreciate that. And I appreciate you indulging me the whole process of sharing my screen and everything.
Yeah, I know what most of it means. It's baffling to me.
So yeah, that is what AlgoRave is basically. It's a blend of algorithms and ravey dance music. When we talk about where this came from, it originated out of electronic music, as I'm sure you can imagine. And that has been around since the early 50s is when we first had music being created or played via the computer. The very first time that ever happened, the first person to ever play music on the computer was actually back in 1951, if you can believe that. There's a BBC recording of a person named Christopher Strachey. They wrote one of the earliest known computer programs to play music on a computer called the Ferranti Mark I at the University of Manchester.
Had a big ass computer.
It was a very big computer at the time. It must have been like a whole room, probably. But his program that he wrote played God Save the King, because British. And other like British melodies.
It's
and not his like
fault.
And there is
it's
actually...
not his fault. He's British.
Exactly. Yeah. It's unfortunate, but you know, make do.
The British listeners
apparently a
were
BBC
joking.
Recording. We're just kidding. Yeah. Well, y'all are
it's
fine.
It's not your fault. You're British.
Citizens. Yeah. But yeah, that is basically the first recorded or known instance of music produced by a programmable computer. Much later, you know, back. You know, when we get into the 70s, we meet people like Wendy Carlos, who you mentioned earlier. Wendy is a musician and composer who more modern times is working on electronic music and film scores specifically.
And I know two notable ones she's done that the listeners probably do.
Oh, yeah.
A Clockwork Orange and The Shining.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Tron, also the 1982 Tron movie.
Oh, hell yeah,
she did
Wendy.
The music for. Yeah, which is like, yeah, absolutely. That needs some good music. And I think the music from Tron is very iconic.
Oh, yeah.
Especially. Same with Clockwork Orange and The Shining, of course.
Can I tell a sweet, interesting anecdote about her that I actually saw one of my trans femme friends share recently? That she was so nervous after she had feminizing surgery to go at jobs that she had... basically what my friend called Wendy going boy mode. So she would glue on sideburns.
Oh my gosh.
And put her hair up in a wig. And that's the first time she, like, not the first time. There's one of the times she went to go meet Stanley Kubrick. So that didn't last forever. But there was a little bit afterwards. She's like, nobody's seen me for a while. I don't know how they're going to react. They like my dead name's music. Do they like Wendy's music? Do they like me? But there's a picture of very clearly a very feminine woman with the sideburns where she's like, gotta do what I gotta do. And it's just like women and our ingenuity.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And I've been there. I've had to quote unquote go boy mode in the past. Not so much anymore, but right after I started transitioning, I had to do it a few times. Just to not, you know, not break any ties that in many cases are long since broken now. But I get it.
Yeah.
I get why she did that. Yeah, she started studying music composition at Columbia University in 1962. Came to prominence with her album Switched on Bach, you may be familiar with, in 1968. And it's basically just classic Johann Sebastian Bach music performed on a Moog synthesizer, which helped popularize its use throughout the 70s. And she actually won 3 Grammys for that album, which is like, hell yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. So, I got curious and went to her website. And she's still kicking. She's still making music.
Oh yeah.
I need you to see this wonderful picture of her on the top of her website. Also, her website looks straight out of 1997, and I say that as the highest of compliments. But her website has a picture of her sitting in front of a bunch of synthesizers and keyboards with a little kitty around her neck, a little kitty who just looks like they couldn't be stopped from cuddling for the picture. And she just looks happy with a little cat. She's a sweet old woman with a cat.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I love Wendy Carlos. She's just an absolute icon and like a legend. if not for Wendy Carlos, synthesizers and music, like that whole concept of electronic music made with synthesizers, would have probably come much later or been much less popularized for a long time. And I really think that the fact that she is a trans woman and went out of her way in 1979 to like raise public awareness of trans issues and things like that, like just such a good person. So,
like, I joked that amazing. The trans stereotype is that you're into coding and computers, but like, I truly think Wendy Carlos is the reason so many trans women are into electronic music, whether they realize it or not.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree.
Like she popularized it, because I've heard that first electronic music recording, and sorry, dude from 1951, it's cool proof of concept.
Yeah, proof of concept, definitely.
Yeah, I think sums up the concept, but Wendy shit slaps.
Yeah, her stuff is actually like really, really good. And I also want to do another shout out to Mort Garrison, who did a lot of early electronic music, specifically the album Plantasia, which is basically electronic music for plants, like intended for plants to listen to.
Wait, I've heard that name. And is it because of the Adventure Zone?
I think so. I think possibly some tracks from that album may have been used or inspired music from the Adventure Zone, potentially. But if you've never heard Plantasia, I highly recommend it. It's such a good chill album, and it really does feel like oh yeah, if a plant wanted to listen to like chill electronic music, I think this is what they would want to listen to.
So that is
so when we talk about
that, I believe Taz Balance's theme music.
Oh really? It's straight from Plantasia?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Oh my god, that's cool. Ah.
Oh, so that's wait.
I don't know why I thought that was something that Griffin made.
Oh, wait a minute. So I'm reading something on, featured on the TAS soundtrack, not the actual theme music. Deja Vu from Ataraxia is the theme song to Balance, and the only Mort song that Griffin uses. But it is the same, the one and the same, Mort Garrison.
That's really cool. Electronic music went about this way for a very long time, and there were developments and things like that that we're all probably very familiar with. I mean, even when we talk about things like autotune, that is essentially a synthesizer modifying or modulating a voice, right? It's forcing a voice to be of a certain pitch. If you think about artists that use, you know, that I forget what it's called, but you know the tube thing that you stick in your mouth and it's like and it makes your voice sound all funky. That is essentially integrating your voice with a synthesizer and synthesizing your voice based off the waveforms of your voice. You're like resynthesizing your own voice with that. There's tons of really, really cool advancements in music's integration with synthesizers in the world. And Algorave is a rather new, in the grand scheme of things, phenomenon in the world of electronic music. It was originally coined, the term, in 2011 by a guy named Alex McLean, aka Yaxu, Y-A-X-U, who is, of course, an Algorave musician, and a person named Nick Collins, who I don't know if they still make Algorave music, but I didn't see a whole lot of information on them, unfortunately. But the two of them were supposedly in a car ride listening to a radio station playing some music, and they were had apparently been talking about, they're both people that are interested in music and new programming, and they wanted to kind of bring the two communities together somehow. And this guy Alex just basically was talking with his friend Nick and had this idea, like, well, what if we just live code music like a DJ would, but like we're coding the music and not like mixing stuff in GarageBand or whatever, right?
It's so weird that it took until 2011 for someone. Do you know what I mean? That seems,
yeah,
I have no doubt that you're right. It's just odd to me that we've probably had the technology to do that at some level for, you know, 35, 40 years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And as long as, you know, synthesizers, like digital synthesizers that exist inside of a computer have been around, and we've had programming languages to talk to them.
Yeah.
This has been possible.
Yeah, just wild. So, wild that it took that long.
Yeah, exactly. Because the example that I showed you earlier, that's just JavaScript talking to a synthesis engine. That's all it is. So it's, yeah, the possibility was there for a long time. And after he had the idea in 2011, the first self-proclaimed Algo Rave took place in March 2012 in London as essentially a warm-up for something called the Super Collider Symposium, which is like a big, basically electronic music event, Super Collider being one of the things that is now popularly used for Algo Raves, but it was previously just used for digitally creating music because it lets you basically run a synthesis engine and then feed other programs into it or just use its built-in IDE.
I recently was watching a video talking about lamenting the commodification of rave culture, because raves used to be a subculture. It used to be, you know, you're going someplace that you are not supposed to have this event. You were going someplace that was secret. Right. It was outside of the bounds of society. You were doing this event. And then, like, in the late 90s, early 2000s, of course, capitalists were like, we can make money off of this. And rave culture stopped being a subculture. It's still a subculture, but it stopped being counterculture.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, I imagine Algo Rave, given what things are like now, is a little more counterculture than traditional rave culture is now.
I think so. And I really think that in modern times, there's been a bit of a terminology switch. I used to be friends with a person who told me at one point that they used to run an underground, like, live music venue. I think they called it like an underground dance club or something like that. And at the time I thought, well, that just sounds like a rave. Like you're playing music and dancing publicly in a place that you're not really supposed to be doing that. At no point did that person ever use the term rave or anything like that. It was all underground nightclub.
You say underground nightclub, and I think of the nightclub from Blade with the blood sprinklers, which is weird because their food.
Yeah, it is weird. It's like if chocolate syrup started spraying from the ceiling at a wedding.
Or like ranch dressing or something.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I'm white, but I'm not that white.
Not sprinklers full of ranch dressing white.
No, certainly not. So yeah, it's definitely something that is not as common as just like standard DJing and things like that. There's not a whole ton of people doing this even nowadays.
Because I imagine the skill it takes.
It kind of, you have to be under, you know, pretty good at programming to be able to do this live. And you also have to be quite good at music to do this live.
Yeah,
interestingly enough,
you have to be pretty proficient at both to be able to do that live.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I found was really interesting, there's an interview with Alex McLean where he mentions that he doesn't really have music experience. There's another person in the music group that he is the lead for called Slub. That's the music group's name, Slub. This other person is named Lucy Cheeseman, but that's their actual like legal name and not their stage name, which is Heavy Lifting.
Oh, I love that.
It's such a good stage name, honestly. I highly recommend checking out Slub and Lucy Cheeseman, Heavy Lifting, Yaksu. And I just found in my notes, I did find a spot where Nick Collins, helped come up with the idea with Alex McLean, his alias is Sick Lincoln, apparently.
Sick Lincoln.
Yeah, which is like, that's a pretty cool alias also. Slub and Sick Lincoln were part of the first Algo Rave in 2012. There's a lot of people that kind of influence how this music sounds and like what kind of music people will generally expect from it. In addition to Wendy Carlos, we also have people like Brian Eno, who was one of the first you're familiar with Brian Eno, making electronic music back in the 70s. They were all influences for people like Aphex Twin, Farmer's Manual, if you've heard them, a bunch of those other like really early electronic music people. And I don't know if you've ever looked this. I could do a whole other info dumpies on how Aphex Twin made music. They used things that you're not supposed to make music with and made music with it. And I don't quite get how they did that, but I did a whole deep dive on it at one point. But Aphex Twin is like just built different.
Early on in my relationship with James, they showed me an Aphex Twin music video, and I just didn't understand it. And they are not my cup of tea, but Brian Eno certainly is.
And it just goes to show like how much of a variety there can be in electronic music.
Yeah.
Because you can have realistic instruments, you can have electronic sounding instruments. You can have video gamey sounding instruments. It's all just digitally produced, and it's all modifications of a sine wave, essentially, right, at the end of the day. These performances are really interesting, too, because they are generally projecting the code onto, like, the screen behind where the DJ booth is so that people can see the music being made. So, like, if you know programming, you can look and say, oh, I see what they're adding. Oh, they're going to do this. And like, it's just,
you can kind of expect what's going to happen next.
Yeah. There's also like some of them will include like audience participation through like dancing and responding to help like shape the event. And generally, because it's so procedural, right? You are procedurally telling the computer to say, all right, follow this set of instructions. You can end up with really kind of alien futuristic rhythms a lot of the time, and just really funky stuff that's totally out there. You can get really wild with like time signatures and stuff, and it's really, really interesting. Alcoraves started as a pretty niche thing, and it was pretty unique to the UK originally, but now it has evolved through, you know, a lot of newfound popularity into a fairly global movement. There's Alcoraves held in, you know, Europe, of course, Asia, North America nowadays. There's a really big foundation there called Alcorave India, which is a collective that's promoting live coding and algorithmic music in India. Yeah. And it really is doing a lot to elevate Alcorave as a performance art and a platform for computer literacy, basically, for like teaching people how to program, which I find is a really interesting avenue to say, all right, maybe you don't want to learn to program this way by making a video game or something. If you like music, let's make music together. And you can learn so many different languages through this.
Yeah, because
so it's really interesting.
Personally, I would have no desire to make a video game, but making good beeps and boorps, you have my attention. I have a point here. So I was recently learning that when someone uses a glossolalia, which is language that doesn't mean anything, it's like speaking in tongues, or if you've seen those people on the internet who are convinced they're descendants of aliens, they call it light language. And it is a bunch of nonsense, right? There is, God, I forget his name, but there's basically an expert in glossolalia saying that they can tell, even though it's not actual words, where someone is from based on their glossolalia, because they are using sounds that are familiar to them. So I wonder if the kind of beats you get different places in the world with Alcoraves sound more like whatever music is more popular in those areas, because that's what people are more likely to think of. Does that make sense? Because with creativity, we're really alchemizing stuff we've already internalized into something new, right?
Yeah, no, it's very, very interesting to think about. And I think it also comes down to the way people not just make music, but also program, right?
Yeah.
I have to imagine that the music regionally is going to sound different, and like what people are expecting is going to sound different. You know, if you think of like Germany, right? Dance club rave music is very, very popular pretty much, you know, all through Germany, from what I understand. And I have to imagine that a lot of the beats that people might go pretty nuts over here might be kind of plain over there. So I don't know. It's interesting.
Like, I could imagine, you know, maybe the States has more hip hop influence in the beats they're choosing. Maybe someone's making, you know, Alcoraves with a reggaeton beat in Puerto Rico. Like,
yeah,
who knows?
Yeah.
Like, it could be different. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And the immediate feedback that you get of like, because it's literally just you hit control enter and it reruns the code and it's playing it immediately. I find that really compelling, because you're almost literally like, people use vibe coding as a joke, right? To say that you are not doing structured proper coding, you're just coding on vibes. This is literally vibe coding for music's sake, which is what you want to do. And so it's a really true form of electronic music, because you're just going, does this sound better or does this sound worse? And then you're just doing that over and over and over again.
You're improvising. It's kind of the opposite, because of my experience with podcasting, where I send it out there and I may or may not get feedback at all. And then sometimes with like today's lucky winner, someone would say something on social media and I'm like, oh, somebody liked that. Okay.
Exactly.
Well, that's a thing somebody liked.
Yeah.
But and here, with like video they get the game immediate, they get the immediate feedback here where it's like, oh, they're going wild.
Yeah, exactly. And with most forms of coding, there is a wrong and right answer, a right and wrong answer rather, to most questions that you're being asked in the programming world. If you're being told, all right, render a, I don't know, a date selection render a nude tane in the programming world, and you're trying to display that nude tane on the screen, there's either you do it or you don't, right? When you run the code to display that image, either you get a nude tane or you don't get a nude tane.
There are like five people who think this is hilarious right now.
Thank you. For those five people, you're welcome. But yeah, the idea of hitting enter and you just get immediate feedback, not of whether the thing you did is right or wrong, but just here's the changes you've made. And I think that's really, really cool. It's very much, it takes the black and white right and wrong out of it. And it's like, just fuck it up and tell it to do whatever. And it might sound really fucking cool. I was just so stunned when I first saw the music that Switch Angel was making. And I was just like, I got to try this. It's really a lot of fun. Because there's a moment when I was making that music before where I was just like, all right, I'm getting some bleeps and blorps. And then I managed to get the hi-hat where it was like a tick 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 tick. And I was just like, oh, okay. All right. And I found myself like bobbing my head. And I'm like, okay. I get it. I'm doing it. I feel it. Like, it was just really an interesting moment where I'm like, oh, I understand how.
Surprise I didn't hear, yeah. Yeah, I'm doing it. Yeah. Yeah. From your room.
It's really, honestly, it's genuinely quite fun. And I can understand why people would want to do that live.
The idea that someone, again, could focus on that live is baffling to me.
I mean, even to me, that sounds scary. Like coding, I'm not good at coding and programming. The idea of doing it live without music involved is rough. But I mean, God, you put in the wrong note and you hit enter. And then that's when you find out you've put in the wrong note. That's scary. So
yeah, my piano teacher has a term she calls teacher pressure, where I will have practiced a song all week. You know, I go to play it for her. I'm going, oh, fuck. Oh, geez. She goes, it's okay. It's the teacher pressure. We'll play it through one more time. It's because I'm watching. I know you have this. So I'll have to play it a few times. She's like, there. It's the teacher pressure. Having a crowd of people, many of them likely high off their noggin, that's an intense teacher pressure.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Because you start playing something and it's clashing. You can't just stop it playing.
No.
You can't just stop the music. You got to like fix it and then keep it going, you know? But yeah, it's wild. It's a really interesting thing. And I hope to see more people out there doing algo raves and live coding music. I think it's really cool. And I'm going to keep trying to do more of it.
Well, do you want to give people, I know you recommended people throughout the episode, but do you want to recommend some stuff for folks to check out?
Yeah, absolutely. The three main artists that I'm familiar with at this point are Switch Angel, which they're the first person I saw, and they're on YouTube and Instagram, Bandcamp. They make all sorts of really, really cool music. Highly recommended. Alex McLean, aka Yaxu, literally just Yaxu, YAXU.org is their website. Lucy Cheeseman, aka Heavy Lifting. The website for Heavy Lifting is just heavy-lifting.org, which, again, nothing to do with weights. It's electronic music, so that's what made it hard to look up. But yeah, those are the three that I'm familiar with at this point that are doing algoraves specifically. And I haven't listened to Sick Lincoln's music just yet, but I'm sure it's also probably very cool. So I'll have to come up with like a cool live coder name for my music.
Don't know why the first thing that came to my head was the Stank Butler. That's
Stank
not it.
Butler.
That's not it.
There's a part of me that wanted to go, all right, I'm the Stank Butler now. But then I thought about it for like another half a second. And I was like, I don't want to be the Stank Butler.
No, I don't want you to be the Stank Butler. But I think my brain is like, yeah, they're all stanky beat. Stank Butler.
Stank but I see how you got there.
Yeah, that's the order of operations. Hey friends, before I get to thanking our Patreon supporters, I'd like to make you aware of a mutual aid opportunity. In the show details, you'll find links to both the Chuffed campaign and Instagram page for funds for Wadi. Wadi is a young Palestinian man living in Gaza in a tent with his 7 family members, and Funds for Wadi is a collective that runs raffles to try to earn Wadi and his family enough money to survive, whether it be for the exorbitantly overpriced food in Gaza, or for getting a new tent for his family to live in, as it is winter in Gaza right now. All the funds go directly to Wadi and helping him and his family survive. So if you would like to donate directly to Wadi, there's a link to the Chuff campaign. Or if you'd like to see what current raffles are going on, you can go to the Funds for Wadi Instagram page for more information about that. Next, I'd like to thank our Patreon supporters like Anarchista, Bethany Glass, Carl Brooks, Chamberlain Foreman, Fintago, Dave Perrell, Gus, Helen Clifford, Janice Weston, Kay Genius, Kate Michigoose, Laura Kramer, Lilith Rain, Lutzi, Megan E., Natasha Neves, Nunya B., Percy, Rachel Rachelson, Randy Lovings, and Sewing Seraph. Now, if you want to help us out, and you've listened to the housekeeping section before, you'll know I'm about to tell you the best way you can do that is by telling other people about the show. We don't take paid ads and we don't pay for ads, so we grow entirely by word of mouth, and it helps us immensely. If it weren't for folks sharing about our OG show, Today's Lucky Winner, we wouldn't have had the time and support to even consider making info dumpies. So if you can tell other people about the show, that would help us immensely. Also, if you listen to Info Dumpies but you've never listened to anything else we've done, we have a new show out called Murphy Bay Magic. It is an audio drama. It is a spinoff to Today's Lucky Winner, but I have done my very best with the writing to make it something where if you listen to Today's Lucky Winner, you're going to enjoy it. And if you didn't listen to Today's Lucky Winner, you're not going to be lost and you'll still probably enjoy it too. So the way it goes is how the first few episodes do can help us get in the charts early, which can get us some real traction. So if you could please check out Murphy Bay Magic, leave a nice comment, a sweet rating, review on your podcatcher of choice. Tell other folks about the show. You know, there's a starting point where you don't have to go through the 90 plus episodes of Today's Lucky Winner to jump in on. The Discord appreciated the term Readaverse, so I'll just call it the Readaverse right now. But jump in on the Readaverse. If you would like to help us at Info Dumpies even more, you can also leave ratings and reviews for Info Dumpies. That gets us more action in the algorithms, and it helps us get recommended to more folks who might like the show on their respective podcatchers. If you are in a place to help us out monetarily, in the show details, you will also find a link to the Mixnomer Patreon page. It will get you bonus material for the stuff we do now, stuff we'll be doing in the future. It's your one-stop shop to get shit we do. The tiers start at just $1 a month. And yeah, it helps us pay the cast for the audio dramas. It helps us get people upgraded equipment. It helps us spend more time working on the stuff we really care about. Most recently, it got spent on commissioning the intro for Murphy Bay Magic and an intro for a sci-fi show that'll be coming out probably in the spring. I don't want to give a date specifically yet, but yeah, probably in the spring. And if you want to hang out with us, you can find a link to the Mixnomer Discord server in the show details. It's the best Discord server. The vibes are immaculate. Everyone is so kind and so sweet. I quite enjoy it. And we do events. We have a lot of fun. We'll play Jackbox games. Violet and I were, Violet was playing and I was providing voices for the NPCs. Another Crab's Treasure, which is like Dark Souls with a crab. We were playing that last week. We have a regular craft club that we try to do every month. We have Stitch and Bitch every Thursday. We have Body Doubling on Mondays. It's great. I love our Discord server, so if you want to come hang out with us, you can check out a link in the show details. That's all I've got for you this time, my friends. Until next time, clever sign off.